Welcome to the Boomerang Life Podcast, where we can all be superhuman in the way we think and the way we act. Here, we open up conversations with experts and real people leading the way in aging, Alzheimer's, dementia, and brain and body health. We open our minds to information that can positively change how we live our lives and care for those we love. Get ready for entertaining, inspiring, and informing conversations. Welcome. We are so happy you are here. In our opening series, we focus on person-centered care, caring about the person and who they are, not the disease or condition that may limit their physical or mental functioning. It's a philosophy that seems simple, but can be elusive when we are tasked with heavy care needs. Professional speaker, dementia expert, and advocate Lori LeBay, founder of Alzheimer's Speaks and several other innovative programs and projects created to help those with Alzheimer's and dementia. She is a passionate advocate who looks for ways to shift our dementia care culture from crisis to comfort. She's recognized by ShareCare and by Dr. Oz as the number one online influencer in Alzheimer's. We're going to get to know her story and how caregivers and those with Alzheimer's and dementia can be supported by her programs and her advocacy. So without further ado, I'd love to welcome Lori LeBay. Lori, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. I think what we'll do is we'll just get started with why this area and what was your interest and your passion behind the things that you're doing.
Well, I never expected to be in this industry. I was in residential real estate for 25 years, working with seniors, which I loved. But my mom, was living with dementia, and she ended up living with it for 30 years. So like many, I was a frustrated daughter going, where are the resources? Where is the help? There's got to be more out here. And I couldn't understand why it was so difficult to get connected. I knew there had to be other families like ours and that there had to be other people helping. And so I decided to kind of throw my hat in the ring. I thought, I don't know what'll happen, but I think I can do better. And I wanted to approach things from a multimedia standpoint because I thought that was something we were stuck into where everything was just written or it was in person. And there's so many other mediums like radio and video and creative ways, I think, to look at things and to reach out and to really allow families to have choice instead of somebody talking with them for 10 or 15 minutes thinking they know their life and what they need. That was another big frustration of mine.
Well, firsthand, you got to experience all of that and realize that maybe. And then there's others, too. And you came up with Alzheimer's Speaks. Was that sort of the first thing that you decided to get involved in and share the stories, or was there something else before then?
Yeah, I was actually urged by senior housing colleagues to step in because I had found this place of peace and joy. And they said everything else is doom and gloom. So I wanted to raise the voice of people diagnosed. And back then, no one really talked about any other dementias. Everything was pretty much Alzheimer's. So I came up with the title Alzheimer Speaks. I started a blog and I started sharing personal stories about, my mom, the good, the bad, the ugly. And people really resonated with that around the world. And that really formulated me and directed me to say, okay, this does matter. There are other people out there like me that are frustrated, and we need to hear from everybody. Even in your introduction, you referred to me as an expert. I don't think any of us will ever be experts because it's constantly changing. And so Alzheimer's Speaks is really about trying to level the playing field and have all voices heard, especially those diagnosed and those caring for them, because they're in the trenches. They're not just book fed on right and wrong and theories of what happens. I mean, they're adapting day to day. And to me, those are really the voices that need to be heard and give so much comfort and take away that loneliness that so many other families are feeling, because they don't feel like anybody understands them. And then when they match up with other people, they're like, oh my gosh, finally I can tell my story. I can be authentic. I don't have to fake it. You know, I don't have to pretend everything is perfect. I can share my emotions without being shamed or shunned.
Wow. I don't know that that has ever existed, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I don't think that that opportunity and place and space has existed. And the value of that for people sort of that might be diagnosed with it, or the value of that for even researchers and people that are trying to find ways to help. I mean, I think that speaks for itself in terms of all of these people's true stories.
Yeah.
You know,
and not that the researchers and all the other organizations aren't doing good things. I just think we can do much better together.
Yeah, it's quite different. And what I found is that there's a lot of information in like research studies, but the practicality of those things being used in direct, you know, indirect use is lacking, or has been lacking. And again, it's just the awareness of like, well, we need to put these things into practice. We need to see what is best and try things. And I don't know if there's a lot of trying things. I think there's a lot of assumptions that because somebody can't hear, or you know, might not be able to understand or understand the words that you're using or know who you are, then therefore we don't need to do much more for them other than make sure that they're, you know, clothed and fed and, you know, and taken care of sort of on the basic level. And the other part of it, I think, is probably, I'm not going to say more important, but as equally as important, and it does get overlooked. But I think these stories that you're able to get from people really humanize it a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And I think also when it comes to research, you know, we need the data. But one of the things that I always struggled with was this cure versus care. And I think we need them both. And I think it's finally coming to light, especially through COVID. People have really understood what isolation does to people, because now they've experienced it themselves. So that's being reflected back in and on to people living in communities, and they're seeing how, you know, how their life is failing. And, you know, some of them have even died because of this isolation and lack of connection, lack of purpose. And so I think, you know, in the last 5 years, things have really started to change, and it's too bad COVID pulled us back. But yet I try to look at the gifts, and the gifts were that it really pronounced what some of the issues are and made it not just about a person in a care home, but everybody needs this. We're seeing our kids are struggling with social isolation, and this is an important factor that we have to take into consideration. No matter somebody's abilities, there are other ways to communicate. You know, words are, you know, basically a quarter of our communication abilities, not even. And yet we still try to force the word and the conversation. And we're kind of being lazy by not taking in all the nonverbals that are signs and signals to us.
Yeah, there's just so much to unpack right there. I was just like, yes, there's so many points about just also the challenges for us as people. And we spoke about this just before. We talked about as caregivers or care partners. Obviously, choosing the word as a care partner is a little bit stronger, maybe, you know, connotation in terms of what you're doing with these with the loved ones that you are caring for. But challenging everyone to see more in the moment, and not just need to be sort of like, just have to find more in the moment, have to figure out what it is that person likes and needs, and they can't ask for those things sometimes anymore. Certainly in the care home that we had, there was, you know, 20% of or 30% of the people couldn't say, I want this, or I like this. And so that's on us to try to figure out what that is. and that speaks to maybe the comment that you said about maybe it's just, you know, we need to be a little bit more active in our approach.
Well, I think part of the problem there, though, too, is for employees, they have a job description, they have tasks to do. And being person-centered, or what I like to say is relationship-based, that's not a thing you do.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of things you do. Mm-hmm. And it really is about slowing down. And I think a lot of times when we say being in the moment, and I totally get that and I believe that, but a lot of people think it's woo-woo-ish, and right. You got to be busy and you got to be going. And so I try to get people to step back and think, when are you the most comfortable? And for most people, it's when they have slowed down. And it might be in a really quiet moment, not even with a person with dementia. It could be by yourself. It could be with a grandchild or a child or your spouse, your partner, where you're just sitting quietly together. But it gives you peace. That can still happen with a person with dementia. We don't have to be talking and filling gaps and making people feel busy all the time. And what I found for myself was the busyness. Like I was a master at the to-do list, and I realized that the to-do list, even though it was all about my mom, was really a lot about making me feel better about a disease that I didn't have control over. So if I was doing all these things, then I was doing the best I could, and I had something that I could explain to people. I had tasks to show, and I didn't even realize I was doing that. Instead of saying, gosh, we just sat quietly and held hands, or I painted her nails, or, massaged her hands with lotion, or we went for a walk. People don't look at that as taking care of somebody. They really look at doing tasks. Well, did you go to the doctor? Are the medications okay? The communications, they really look at tasks. And so there's a huge paradigm shift in terms of what we have to talk about in terms of what is care. And care to me gets down to really three basic things. Are they safe? Are they happy? And are they pain-free? And when you focus on those three things, you do your physical tasks different. You'll find you don't need to do them all at all, or that somebody, you can now allow somebody else come in to do it, because it's not about control and doing it your way. It's about helping someone else build a relationship with them and being part of the care system too. So lots of changes, lots of exciting things taking place, not going as fast as I'd like, but we're working on it. We're all working on it together.
It's powerful. I think that what you just said is, if I can sort of say that being with those people and just being in there for those moments of, holding someone's hand or just sitting there. And I think the value, the perceived value of that needs to go up. And I think that's where some of the challenges is too, is like if a care staff decides to have a sit down, with Gladys or, whoever, there's sometimes that perceived value of, well, she's just sitting down. But what they're not seeing is that she's actually, calming Gladys or giving her an opportunity and that residual feeling may help, Gladys, get through the next, 3 or 4 hours before she goes to bed or whatever that might be. But we could also, if we practice this normally, this is where I feel the humanity piece comes in, is that when we practice that normally, as we engage even with the people in our life who may not have, dementia or Alzheimer's, then it's not such an odd shift or placement when we have to work with someone in care. It's the same thing. We just, transfer that same philosophy, of care, of caring for someone or being with somebody. And I do think there's a bigger picture of this in terms of just how we interact with each other. Maybe.
Well, even like when staff is in communication to family, they might have on their calendar at Tuesdays at 10 o'clock, this is when I'm going to make my calls. Well, family expects that. They know now it's a pattern for you. This isn't necessarily an authentic conversation. This is just to get off your to-do list so that you can report to your supervisors, who are a lot of times micromanaging you, that this is important. But the way it's delivered is different because it is a task. It is something that you have to get done instead of, you know, just getting our staff and our families in the mode of taking pictures and sending them, you know, to family and go, gosh, you know, your dad had the most fabulous joke that just had us laughing all morning long. And we've heard it 50 times, but it's still the best every time he says it because he's so proud and so happy. And that ripples off to all of us. You know, that's a much different message than everything's going okay. Just thought I'd check in. And still, when the family receives that call, every time they see it from any type of care home, it kind of stops your heart because what's it going to be? Because a lot of times it's not good information either. I shouldn't say it's not good, but it's not happy information. You know, a drug was missed, somebody fell, something got stolen or is missing, somebody wandered off. I mean, it's those types of things that are heart stoppers for families. And if we can partner with families and help them realize that we really are full care, and full care means caring for them as well, we're going to have raving fans who are going to want to step in and step up and help us instead of sometimes, in just about every community I've been in, you know, I talk with staff about why do family act that way? You know, well, family act that way because they have limited time. And so they're coming in looking for problems. And so that's why they always hand you problems, but you haven't built trust for them to know that they don't have to worry that the Kleenex just fell on the floor right after the janitor left, you know, housekeeping left. But that's their job in that moment. And so we're not training people to do the right things because we're not working in most situations as a true team.
Right. And something you just said, you said full care, which I thought was a very, very perfect, I guess, perfect way of describing like the person-centered care, you know, person and family-centered care, but just that full care also is maybe a more concise way of just saying it's not just one thing, it's everything. You know, there's a fuller way to approach this. Yes. I resonate with all of those things. With that, maybe we can talk a little bit about some of the projects that you're working on, because there's a lot. You've obviously found a lot of, you know, a lot of places to grow in this world of, you know, dementia friendly and dementia mapping. And maybe we can talk and sort of move into what that's about and the whole dementia map project that you have.
Sure. Well, Dementia Map has been a dream of mine for 37 years. Something I wanted from the day my mom got diagnosed, thinking, why aren't there resources, products, and tools and services for me to be able to find easily on my own? And so this is something that I built with my partner, Dave Wiedrich, who has the Memory Cafe directories for 5 different countries. And so, you know, our goal is to even out the playing field for the big and the small. Because if you go to Google something, you're going to get 3 pages of paid ads. And so you're going to get all the large companies that have the money. But there's a lot of small companies or individuals out there that have great things that can help you, but you'll never be able to find them. And we want the families to be able to make that choice of what is their need. And not that the big companies are bad. That's not the point. It's just, if there is a product, service, or tool, it was typically built because there was a need. And so why aren't we sharing those needs openly? In doing that, we are able to educate families even on what's available. They don't know the terms, you know, that are even used in this particular portion of healthcare. A lot of people don't even know what a neurologist is. But they're told to go find one because they've not needed one in the past. And, you know, if they put in it, like in a hospital or a clinic, a lot of times if they put in memory loss or Alzheimer's or dementia, nothing comes up in the search. I mean, so there's so much education that needs to go on between everybody to make a smoother transition for families, because if we can reduce the stress of the family and if we can give them more support, you know, it's not going to be as stressful out in the community. It's not going to be, and I'm talking communities as a whole, and it's not going to be, there's not going to be as much wear and tear on staff either, because now we're working together and we can be sharing resources instead of staff trying to dig through those. So, you know, we have like 150 categories that people can search. And some of them aren't full quite yet. Like we don't have, we want to get elder law and real estate agents and things like that in there because those are important factors. But we're focusing on some of the basics, but there's so much great information, lots of free things. I'll mention a couple. There is a new thing called Saltbox TV, which is a free online streaming service that is has been designed specifically for seniors. There's Zinnia TV, which is for people with dementia in mid to late stages that can't follow a plot anymore. And they have like calming short little video clips that can be of nature, of pets, of travel, all kinds of things with music where you don't need words to follow a plot. But I think in this day and age with everything going on in the world, we all need that, you know, and you can do, you know, do that for free, or they have a small subscription. There's a thing called Music Mends Minds, where music therapists now are doing three sessions a week online free to anybody. And they can, I mean, that is massively huge. I interviewed them and they had one gentleman who had dementia who hadn't played, I want to say it was his trumpet for like 20 years. He started playing again. You know, some people will get up and dance. Some people will sing. Some people will just sit and enjoy. There's no expectation, you know, with that. But there are, you know, there's all authors with over 250 authors that are specific in dementia and caregiving. So it's just, there's just tons and tons and tons of things. Coaching that people don't even know existed. What do you mean? What do I need a coach for? I don't have time for a coach. Well, a coach can really help you reduce your time and your stress and help you find balance and joy. And that's a really important factor because your journey might be as long as mine. Mine was 30 years. People kept saying, oh, she'll never live that long. That doesn't happen. Well, tell my mom that, you know, tell my family that. And more people are getting diagnosed earlier. So that is going to be a bigger scenario that we're seeing. So Dementia Map has a calendar of events. It's got a glossary, a blog, all kinds of things there. But that has probably, to me, been one of the biggest accomplishments. And we've just touched the tip of the iceberg. Everyone is welcome to be part of that. No one has to sign in. There's no password. You don't have to worry about getting hacked or scammed. You can just utilize the site. And for businesses, if they don't want to do a free one, we do have a couple of upgrades where they can get banner ads and be in the calendar and for extremely economical costs. Because, again, it wasn't about making money. It was about serving. And we know that businesses are struggling with finances, and it doesn't have to be high priced if we all step up and work together. I mean, to me, dementia has been sold to us for years that it's complicated, and I think it's really very simple. And so everything I try to do goes back to that simplicity of, let's just make it easy. Let's just cut to the chase. Everybody's got a story to tell and something to learn. And something to share, you know, just very easy.
Wow, thank you. That's, I can't wait to go check it out. And it's just easy. It's like if somebody, I'm guessing if somebody just enters into that world of dementia in some way, shape, or form, would that be the starting point that you would suggest?
It would be a great starting point. And you can search by location, but I would actually recommend that you don't, because I think that's one of the paradigm shifts we have to make. There are so many services, products, and tools that don't have to be in your backyard anymore. Now, if you're ready for someone to be in a community, that's a different story, or an adult day, which most of them are still closed, you know, or a clinic. And to be honest, we don't have any clinics in there yet. That's going to be a big... that's going to be a big hurdle because clinics and hospitals don't really like to list somebody else out there. They're worried about liability and things. And, you know, I think we all have to kind of grow up and make our own decisions and choices and realize not everything's going to be for everybody. But there are lots of free things out there. Facebook is another great place for people to go to. Yeah. There are all kinds of support groups out there. You know, our radio show, watching Dementia Chats, which are videos that we've done where the true experts are those with dementia. We cover all kinds of topics. And oh my gosh, they have such great insights into how do we help them, what's working, what's not working, what to consider if you're thinking about making a move, because a lot of people think they got to leave their house and how that's going to affect things, or, you know, weeding down little simple things. And Susan Session made a comment, she's now passed, but she was living with dementia, that to me was really powerful. She said, you know, you look at something as an item. I look at something as a memory, and that item is helping me trigger that memory. And if you just toss it away, my mind is kind of melting the way it is, and I'm losing memories, but now you're physically throwing them out. And it was just like, wow. We just have to look at everything so differently, and also realize what's good for dementia is good for all of the world at all ages and stages. It really is about being respectful of others. That's really what it comes down to. Allowing them to feel safe and purposeful.
You've just answered, yes. And one of my questions was along those lines of just trying to find out what, you know, through something that you've been through, what were some of the lessons or some of the things that, you know, you would, or the top three things that you would take away. And I think you just said, you know, something I completely believe is that it's not just about learning how to interact respectfully and successfully with those that, you know, have some memory loss, but interacting successfully with everybody around us.
Well, and think about the times when you felt left out, where you haven't fit in a crowd, and how uncomfortable that is. And so often that's how we're making these people feel. And you know where your mind goes, it's swirling, you know, when you're in that mode and you're feeling less than. And sometimes we're perpetuating that, thinking we're making their life easier because we're just going to do it for them instead of letting them do what they're capable of doing. I did that to my dad who had brain cancer. We were going on a trip and I packed everything up. And what I realized, I was trying to make it easy for me. So I had, you know, I got everything into one suitcase, but he felt horrible because he couldn't pick up the suitcase. He couldn't, you know, he had cancer, and so he didn't have the strength. And he, you know, he felt less than. I easily could have made a smaller suitcase for him to pull. Didn't even cross my mind until after I saw his face. Yeah. And so it's really about inclusion, looking at we're all more alike than different, especially on that feeling level. And it's not about, as we say, what we do, but it's how we make somebody feel. But yet we are still focused on our tasks of what we have to do, or what it has to look like on Facebook or to our friends and family, that this image. And one of the biggest things I think that I learned was to let go of perfection and focus on progress. And progress means it's never going to be perfect. It never should be perfect, because I should always be trying to do better. And if I screw up, then that's fine. Let it go. Don't let your inner critic beat you up forever and stop you. But learn the lesson from that oops, because that will make you a better person and a better care partner.
And for those who are at home with their loved one, or with, like, that have at home, there's the same mindset that's important. But for those that are in care facilities, or caregivers that are under some type of, like, you know, schedule regime, getting paid, you know, and you've got to accomplish so much work, where do you think the shift has to come for this to be, for this philosophy, you know, sort of, I'm not sure if you put it into a philosophy or of how, you know, you would sort of put it together. But how does that get sort of translated into care homes where, you know, it's just, it's not the people so much in this, in that they're doing the work, but they're trying to do it for the look of the person that's above them, right?
Well, I think it's how the job descriptions are formulated. And, you know, so often we have this whole list of tasks and they don't build them in a team format. You do this, you do that. And what we're finding too is people don't cover for one another when there's not that team format. And everyone's going to be in crisis at one moment or another. They're going to have three people that need help. But if you don't, if you haven't built in that team aspect, two people are going to be in crisis much longer because this one person who's caring for these people can only do one person at a time. So to me, it gets down to basics. I remember when I was, I used to work in the world of developmental disabilities. And when I was younger, you know, we had a huge community, and this was back in the 70s. And, you know, we'd get everybody into the shower, kind of corral them all in. Everybody was laughing, though. We're shaving everybody's armpits one after another. But we were laughing. We were singing. It was kind of like college days, you know, like a big dorm room. And yet, you know, we had quality control come in and say, you can't do that. There's no privacy. They don't care. They're living in community. This isn't about, you know, everybody has to have this one-on-one. This is really about feeling part of. And I can't tell you how many leather shoes I wrecked given showers, you know, back in the day. But everybody had a great time. You know, it was shower night, or, you know, we were going to do hair, we were going to do nails. We did it in a group. So there was that socialization. And I think that is a big piece that is missed.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was a good example, because some people might say, oh, we can't do that, you know.
I know.
But, you know, it's that whole basis of just looking at things differently. And, yes. You know, when you live in community, it is kind of a dorm life. You know, some people have their own apartments, and that's one thing. But some in nursing homes, you know, don't. But, I threw it in there just as an example of just looking at things differently, you know.
Yeah.
Because everything has to be done individually, and we're so worried about privacy. And for some people, that privacy is going to be extremely important. But for many, they would rather just laugh and have a good time and feel part of the day.
Well, what else is there to do, right?
Yeah. Or, you know, if it's cooking, everyone gathers in the kitchen. But we don't allow that so much of the time, the way we structure staff and the way we've told them it needs to be done.
So true. Lots of, and with some of the other projects that you're doing, obviously there's so many, and, you know, not enough time probably to, you know, give each its due, but with what you just talked about and, you know, the idea of that way of living and the philosophy of caring for those in care. What are some of the other, maybe is there one or two other projects that you have that sort of speak to that movement and that idea?
Well, I think, you know, traveling with dementia is really important. And so, you know, there's a group on Dementia Map. If you just put in travel, that will pop up. That's doing some really cool things. They're working internationally together. The UK's kind of been ahead. The US is starting to get on board, but there's lanyards that will identify people. There's education here in the US that's being done with TSA. They're in the process of trying to raise funding to do some videos for training for staff. But you know, people have that right to still be able to participate, but they also need the tools. They need to know that, you know, the loud sound of the plane or being in large crowds might be really disturbing to people. So maybe they need earplugs when they're going, you know, or a little headset. So there's, you know, knowing where are the family bathrooms ahead of time, knowing that you can get help getting from the door to the ticket booth, you know, and assistance of getting on the plane. How is all of that done so life can be easier? There's lots of things that we can do with that. There is, I'm involved with a film called A Timeless Love, and that's been one of my great joys too. We have been able to do that in person, and I can't do it online, but one of the things we did with this film was to do a talk back with it. And it was interesting because, again, it's kind of old way versus new way. People go, okay, well, you know, we'll get some vendors and they'll do the talk back. I said, no, we're not talking at them. We want the audience to download what they saw and to let them be able to say, who did they see in the movie that they recognized? Was that them? Was it a brother, a sister, a mom, or a dad? Was this an experience they had? And the show is so powerful and touches on so many aspects of caring for a loved one, for both professionals and especially families. One time I showed it, and this was hilarious. I want to say we were in Texas, and we were in a room that didn't darken. They couldn't see the film, but they sat and they listened for an hour and a half. That's how well written this film was. And we still had the talk back. And I remember, you know, running up to the executive director saying, oh, you know, I can flip to another program. He's like, look at them. They're totally engrossed. And, you know, so again, thinking out of the box and really paying attention to those nonverbals is really important. The memory cafes are a wonderful concept. I just think so highly of, which I hate to even call them a support group, because to me, they're like a bridge club or a bowling league. You don't show up for the equipment. You show up for the camaraderie. And dementia brings you together, but it's not the focus. We talk about, you know, the grandkids came to visit and somebody's birthday and there was a flat tire and someone's in the hospital. I mean, we talk about all of life. And then people have the opportunity to say, hey, I found this great resource, or gosh, we're really struggling with this. And then teaching facilitators to stay quiet and let the group answer first. And, you know, so often we think being a facilitator, we have to have all the answers. They're full of knowledge, and we can empower them and let them see that when they start sharing. You know, they all feel they're 10 steps behind somebody, but they're 10 steps ahead of somebody else. And again, it's just that whole normalizing. It allows us to learn. It allows them to learn. And it just, it really builds this family atmosphere. You know, we don't do in ours programming. Some do, they're all a little bit different, you know, so, but check them out, because you will make great friends in this group that understand no one has to apologize for anything. And it's for the person with dementia and their care partner to, you know, be together. I had somebody say, well, you can't have them be together, because normally, you know, a caregiver group is, they complain and they, you know, worry and stuff. And, you know, we need to teach people how to talk openly, because sometimes that person with dementia has got the answer for them, but they've never asked.
Interesting. Yes, that's true. But yeah, and you just have to, shine the light on those possibilities. And then it just gets the brain to think in a different way. And then people can start to figure out some of these other, they can connect the dots, you know, oh, if I can do this with this, and I can ask them their opinion, and well, then I can start to engage in those more, like those conversations that are actually, you know, two-sided, right?
Yeah. And to get rid of our biases, where we think somebody can't do something. I did a dementia chats, or actually it was a one of our radio shows on art in dementia.
Yes.
And it was so powerful, because they did beautiful, beautiful artwork. And I'll never forget, one man did a piece of clay, and it was kind of a gray hunk of clay. And you looked at it and you're thinking to yourself, that's nothing, you know, nothing major. And then he explains his art, and he just drew kind of a, you know, eyes and a kind of a straight mouth. And he said, that's kind of how I feel on the outside was just, nothing really affects me, my emotions. I don't react like I used to. And then he turned it to the side, and this gray square hunk had like yellow and green just flowing out of it. And he said, "That's how I feel on the inside, that I'm just losing my mind. And I can't control." And it was like, it was so powerful. I mean, and so some of these people are doing unbelievable artwork. And I think part of that is because they don't worry about what anybody thinks. You know, many of them have gone past that, where that's just lost. They've lost the filter. So they don't really care. They're not preoccupied, and they just do it. And right. I mean, there's a few that should be commissioned for their artwork. I mean, just absolutely.
Wow.
Amazing. Yeah.
We just to add to that, we obviously had art therapy, but you know, when people come in, you kind of see what their likes are, what their dislikes. Mm-hmm. I mean, they painted before, then they were technically, you know, be invited to the painting group. But there was a lady, she was about 102, and she was doing the art, and her family came in, and they were like, we'd actually put it into the calendar, because it was like a collection of all the work that some of the seniors had done. And her family was like, "That's my mom, or that's grandma's." And they're like, "She's never painted in her life. Like, she's never painted in her life. She hasn't really done anything creative in that sense. But, you know, this was a new opportunity." And that's what I feel like, you know, when we're in care, it's not people assume, and this is sort of like, well, it's the last place they're going to be before they go, but let's reassess that to be, this is a place to live, not a place to
yep.
die. So this is a place to come alive. And, you know, with all the supports that are around you, let's make it that, right? And this is what's so awesome, is that there's just so much still tapped inside. But, you know, we have to get people on that bus so that they can start to see how to work that, how to open up the people's, open up their minds. Really, it's just opening up our minds. I have one last question for you, and it is just, what would you like to see change in the next year? You know, sort of that big vision of, you know, you've got a massive vision with the dementia map, and that's a big tool, and it's just all of the pieces on there. I'm assuming the memory cafe is on the dementia map as well, where they can find things. And, you know, it's like this big conglomerate of everything that, you know, that big starting point, which is huge, which is a big vision. And it's, the vision of that, I'm sure, is expansive as you look forward. But in the next year, what would you like to see change in a positive way for those with Alzheimer's and dementia?
I would really like to see from a business side, that the profit and nonprofits come together, instead of, there's kind of this line in the sand, and many of them don't work together. I would love to see all of them join us on Dementia Map, but a lot of times when companies are big, they don't feel that they need that. It's not about them.
Yeah.
This is about serving people. And even if they take up a free listing, we don't care. Just get your information on there. Same, we have people with dementia who are on there that have great blogs, or they've done books, or they've got videos. I'd love to see more social support groups from Facebook get listed. Everything, you know, everyone's time is so crunched, but it really takes seconds to do. And you will make a massive difference in so many people's lives. The other thing that I would love to see is more conversion happen, you know, in the utilization of volunteers. I think they came out of the woodwork during COVID, and I'm afraid that they're going to get lost, and that communities and businesses aren't going to continue to tap into them. I think people really saw a way for themselves to feel purposeful and help out. And I think that there's a shift going on, and more people are seeing that, especially our younger population. They don't want to be like their mom and dad. They want to feel purposeful in whatever it is that they're doing. So let's tap into that. Let's invite them in. and not get so micromanaged that we scare everybody off. You know, I think that's one of my big fears is everybody thinks that everything has to have this curriculum. And even when we launched the first dementia friendly community, people are like, well, how did you do that? You know, we've talked about it for 2 years. We don't even have a mission statement. It's like, kick that sucker to the curb and just start. Just start. Just do something. You know, because every time their board changes, then they're back to wordsmithing and they're starting from scratch. Just start and know that it's never going to be perfect. You're always going to be making changes. And that's how we create our best selves, our best society, is by not beating ourselves up, but going, things have changed. We need to do something different, you know. And if we're serving a group, we should not get so stuck in this black hole that this is all we do. Listen to them. They have great ideas of how you can still meet the needs instead of people scratching their head going, well, where'd they all go? Why aren't they coming back? Because you didn't allow them to be part. And, you know, I was part of that even with our memory cafe. When we were meeting in person initially, we would set up the room and we had everything all ready. And then we realized, oh my gosh, they want to set up the room. They want to help get the name tags and deliver them to people and greet as they come in. We are making more work for ourselves because we're looking at the word service wrong. You know, it's not just about serving them. It's kind of like that word caregiver, where you have to do everything for someone else. And we've taken the word service and we've made it not relationship based. And if you're truly serving and you are taking into consideration the whole circumstance, the whole person, then it's a relationship. And that's a whole different feeling and a whole different concept. So those would probably be my top ones in seeing shifted in this next year.
All right. Well, maybe we'll have a chat in a year and we'll hopefully see that there's been some movement. But those really, I mean, those are big things, but they feel doable, but it's just the mindset, right?
Yep.
Once that mindset shifts, then I think all of those things that you know that needs sort of like kind of change, I think they just change, right? It's
yep.
Not a big deal. But if there's anything else that we haven't touched on that you'd like to add, if there's anything else that we haven't touched on, let me know. Or I think we covered a lot, but is there anything else?
I think we covered a lot too. I guess I would just wrap up to, no matter who's listening, if you're living with dementia, if you're a family care partner, or if you're a business professional, know that you have knowledge to share. And don't keep it to yourself. You know, people need your knowledge. And we can make bigger changes faster when we all open up and are authentic. Nobody's better than anyone else. And everyone can contribute.